The National Park Service is currently developing a plan for Isle Royale National Park that will decide the fate of several North Shore families with historic ties to the island. One of those families is the Sievertsons. Stuart Sievertson of Duluth spent his boyhood summers on Isle Royale and recalls his family's long connection to the place.
My grandfather arrived there about 1892 with two of his brothers, and they were he was a teenager, I think he was about 18 at the time, and they began commercial fishing there, and the grounds around Isle Royale were very well known as being rich fishing grounds, but they were difficult to get to. It was an isolated place, and there were lots of difficulties. They mostly used rowboats and sailboats to begin with.
Isle Royale was a vibrant, close-knit community when Sievertson was a boy. He was surrounded by generations of family, living simply, close to the land and close to the fish.
When I was a youngster, the fishing was still hook-line fishing. They would get up about 3:30, 4 in the morning and go run these herring nets, these bait nets. And then come back to the dock and do some bait processing, have breakfast, and then head out onto the lake. And I can remember those mornings sleeping on top of the engine box. And they were covered, you know, with wood box, and then there was canvas on top, and the canvas kind of had, you know, fish juice smell, and as the engine warmed up, be lying there looking over the gunwale and seeing the sun rising. It was a beautiful sight. Often the water was just dead calm, glassy calm, and it seemed to me at the time when I was a youngster that it was just sort of like magic, that these fish would come up out of the deep water and bite on our hooks, and we'd catch these fish and go in, in the mid-afternoon, and it was just like God or Mother Nature or whatever. It just provided for us. All we had to do was to do the work.
When efforts began in the 1930s to designate Isle Royale as a national park, the fishermen, summer cabin, and resort owners who had title to their lands were bought out by the Park Service. For the Sievertsons, it was a dramatic and memorable event, and the story is part of family lore.
What occurred was one day during the late 30s, a flying boat showed up on the harbor, and in it was the Secretary of the Interior, Harold Ickes, and Bagley, who was the purchasing agent, and they came and offered my granddad $50 for his house and fish house dock, net house, and storage shed, tool shed, and so on. And they didn't know what to do for a while, and then it turned out that eminent domain was going to be used to condemn these properties. And it turned out that by accepting a lower payment, my granddad was able to get a lifetime lease, which passed to my dad. And then upon my dad's passing in 1994, it went to my mother.
The Sievertson family has continued to maintain their property and commercial fish on Isle Royale for more than a century. But like other families on the island, elders are passing on and lifetime leases are expiring with them. They and others find themselves in a state of limbo from year to year, unsure if the Park Service will allow them to return to the family place. Sievertson feels that some officials at Isle Royale National Park seem to want to push the families out, ending their personal connections to the island. He says recent indications from park management have been less than encouraging in that regard.
When my mother passed away last spring, within 2.5 weeks, I received a letter from the current superintendent, Phyllis Green, stating that, as you know, the special use permit to carry on commercial fishing at Isle Royale is in your mother's name and is non-transferable. And then the letter went on to more or less tell me to get ready to pack up our stuff and go. Well, as it turns out, that really wasn't a proper way to state it. I mean, she can write a new special use permit at any time she wants. So this was really disingenuous of her, I would say. She could have issued a new permit and we could have fished last fall. As it turns out, the fishing this past fall was the first interruption of our family's fishing on Isle Royale in over 108 years, and there was no purpose to it. Along with that, other letters went out to other families, taking a very hard line, telling people to, you know, inventory their belongings and be prepared to either remove the ones they want or turn over to the National Park Service what they wanted to leave behind. Now, this kind of runs against a more recent National Park Service policy that has been very anxious to preserve cultural connections among people who have spent time who show evidence of caring about Isle Royale, you know, or about national parks. But this was her approach, and it got this cultural resource management process off to kind of a bad start unnecessarily. And we're still puzzled over why she's taken this hard line. Other than that, she just doesn't care much for the human cultural connections with Isle Royale.
The Park Service is currently working on a plan for managing Isle Royale's cultural resources, which will decide, among other things, the fate of the Isle Royale families. The Sievertson family and others aren't sure what to expect, and they worry about losing their places and their way of life on Isle Royale.
The basic concern that a lot of the families have is that there may be a kind of a cultural cleansing going on Isle Royale, that the people are going to be chased out of their buildings and then they'll be left to molder and disappear. Or there'll be cables wrapped around them, as happened to many of the fishermen's families, and they were just winched into the water. That happened in recent times as well. I should mention that one of the things that it's important to realize, if you look at the total area that is occupied by these families, including the fishing families and the summer resident families and the families that were connected with maybe old hotels out there, the total space concerned would be maybe 50 acres. This is out of a 500,000-acre, you know, half-million-acre wilderness. So we're talking about 1% of 1% of the area on Isle Royale. And most of these places are off on off-lying islands. They're not like a blot on the wilderness landscape or anything like that. Families have been coming and going and trying to keep the places up for years and years. And a lot of families have brought up their children and taught them boating and fishing and appreciation of the outdoors and of wilderness values and so on. Why now suddenly must all of this stuff be swept aside? I guess what I'd like to see would be some appreciation on the part of the top staff at Isle Royale National Park and at the regional level, a recognition of the importance of the cultural history of Isle Royale, and not just the, you know, recording it and writing it down, but continuing it so that people could come out and see maybe commercial fishing or research fishing. It could come to visit families out there, that families would be able to maintain their the buildings and the way of life that they've carried on out there for a long time. And that these could possibly be passed on from one generation to the next.
The Park Service is seeking public comment on how to manage Isle Royale's cultural resources, and right now there's an opportunity to weigh in on a set of preliminary questions. Go to the National Park Service website at parkplanning.nps.gov/comment. This round of public commentary lasts until January 16th. For North Shore Community Radio, I'm Kara Thomas.